The Everything Home Podcast is brought to you by Helping the People. We're a real estate company, home resource center, and nonprofit organization that's disrupting the home buying and selling experience by providing relationship-based real estate with a socially conscious purpose. We match home buyers and sellers with our preferred realtors, and 25% of their commission is donated to our Homes for Veterans program, which financially assists veterans who want to buy a home or need home improvements for their service-connected injuries. We created this program as a way for Americans to honor the men and women of the United States military for their service to our nation and the sacrifices they've made. So if you're looking to buy a home or it's time to sell yours, please give us a call at 833-694-6636 or visit our website at helpingthepeople.org. Not only will you be working with our realtors, who are among the top 1-5% in Arizona and the greater San Diego area, you'll be changing the life of a veteran while we change yours. That's 833-694-6636 and helpingthepeople.org. We look forward to you becoming a part of our very unique community.
Welcome to Everything Home, where we talk about life, stuff, and balance. Your home is the base for everything in your life, from the structure and contents to what goes on inside and within yourself. To make sure this foundation is solid as can be, we invite a special guest to share something you will find enlightening, inspiring, and entertaining. Now here's your host, Michelle Swinnick. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Everything Home, where we talk about life, stuff, and balance. Today, we're showcasing one of our veteran nonprofit partners, Helping Hands for Freedom. My guest is the CEO and Executive Director, Eric Snells. Their mission is to support Gold Star families, military families, and children facing a service member's injury, loss, and deployment. Helping Hands for Freedom is one of Helping the People's veteran nonprofit organization partners, and they receive a portion of donations received through our Homes for Veterans program. Helping the People is a 501c3 nonprofit organization and real estate company. We match home buyers and sellers with our preferred realtors, and 25% of their commission is then donated to the Homes for Veterans program, which financially assists veterans who want to buy homes or need home improvements for their service-connected injuries. So if you're looking to buy or sell your home, please contact us at 833-694-6636. Again, that's 833-MY-HOME-6, or visit our website at www.helpingthepeople.org. I promise you will have the best real estate experience of your life. And remember, just being conscious of your choices and buying decisions will change a veteran's life. It's time we help those who served for us. So thank you very much for helping those that did serve for you. So now let's go to Eric. Hey, Eric, how are you doing today?
How are you today?
I am very good. I'm very good. Why don't you give us the rundown on Helping Hands for Freedom?
Well, basically, it started in 2008. A man named Patrick Shannon had been wounded severely in the early Iraq War, Operation Iraqi Freedom, and he was in Walter Reed Hospital, and he realized that his family wasn't getting any real help, but a lot of the veterans in the hospital were getting tons of help from the various armed services. So he approached the Wounded Warrior Project and asked if he could start a children's version or a family's version of that, and they said, no, our charter is strictly for veterans, specifically very severely wounded veterans, so we can't help you with that. So they welcomed and said, hey, Patrick, go ahead, you know, start your own deal. That's fine. We'll support you that way, and they have in the past. And so Patrick met a guy named Rod Smith who specialized in 501c3s, and he and Rod formed Helping Hands for Freedom back in 2008. So that was in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Phoenix, Arizona, our two primary locations. And the whole mission is basically what you said. We support the families of the fallen, wounded, and deployed. So there has to be children in the home, 18 or under, in our charter for us to help with a life need program or a life enrichment program, Dream Chaser, whatever the program might be. So it's all about the family side of things versus just the pure veteran side of things.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of them. It sounds like that they go through so much trauma because they're losing a parent, mom or dad.
Or sometimes sibling as well. So you have the situation where in the Gold Star world, the Gold Star program actually is interesting. It's kind of began almost by accident in World War I, but became formalized by Eleanor Roosevelt around World War II. So you have a Blue Star, means you have a son or daughter deployed in the armed services. And the Gold Star was then a designation given to you when they had passed in the line of duty. And that's a pretty severe designation. Obviously, nobody really wants to be a Gold Star family. Now they've amended the Gold Star again because there are so many post-deployment suicides that are really caused by the ravages of PTSD or traumatic brain injury. They now have given the Gold Star designation also to families who've lost a loved one to the post-war suicide kind of trauma, which, by the way, is far more than KIAs. There's been about 6,500 veterans, soldiers, sailors, Marines, that were killed in action since 9/11, but there's over 8,000 a year that take their own lives. So that's a very significant difference. And half of those are post-9/11 of that group. The other half is primarily Vietnam veterans. So in that case, you have a lot of younger people, basically, who have not been able to get this proper support when they come back from the war. And eventually they suffer job loss, divorces, financial issues, and many of them just decide that they're better off taking their own life than trying to keep going. So it's a very sad situation and traumatizes, obviously, 8,000 families a year.
Is there one common factor that makes these guys and girls really go down that path of suicide, or is it there's so many different factors?
Well, I think the primary factor is difficult to get care. VA is difficult to get into. It can take months. My own son was involved with this situation, and it took him 8 months to get his first appointment after he was back from Afghanistan. And that's a very troubling period. When you think about it, you're in trouble. You know you're in trouble. In many cases, your wife or husband sees a different person. The kids see a different person coming back from a conflict. They don't know, nobody knows how to deal with it. And a lot of times, the frustration builds, the anger builds, and divorce is very common in situations like that. And it's also very difficult to hold a job if you have issues like a PTSD situation. And employers recognize it. And so things kind of like tumble down the hill, if you will. And I think the primary thing is because they can't get any care early on, that kind of makes everything worse. Once they're in the system, the care typically is some sort of drug to calm their nerves or whatever. And that can be good or bad based on their own personality. In my son's case, one of the drugs they gave him caused a seizure. And they don't really have a great answer for that because they have to kind of just try and see what will help that individual person with their individual symptoms. In his case, medicinal marijuana became, I guess, his drug of choice, you'd say. And I'm convinced it probably saved his life because it was a calming agent without any real side effects. And that was probably the primary thing. So I guess I'd go back and say the key thing is lack of initial care. It kind of starts the downward path. And once you're down that path to a certain extent, it's hard sometimes to recover.
The VA was all over the news here years ago, and they were supposed to be cleaning it up and getting things more organized so that the care was faster and come up with alternative ways that the servicemen and women can get into the hospitals sooner. Has any of that really changed, or was it just – is it more talk and not really anything that's been implemented properly?
My exposure is it's better, but they have a long way to go still, and the current director would tell you that. She's very candid about that. In my son's case, this was back in 2012, so it's been 6 years. I don't know that it takes 8 months anymore, but it's not like you walk in and you're done. It's still hard to get into the program. And it's not just the VA here in Phoenix, Arizona. The one in D.C., there's an article recently in USA Today, that was in such bad shape. At some point, there were actual surgeries they began that they couldn't finish because they didn't have the proper medicines and post-operative care. They had to actually literally go across the street to a private hospital and borrow things. That's how I guess the malfeasance level can be so high in some VA hospitals that it's hard even to imagine in the United States of America that a VA hospital in Washington, D.C. will not have proper supplies for surgical procedures. It blows you away when you read about it. And that was a study done by the VA itself, on itself. So it's more than just Phoenix, Arizona. It's kind of a widespread situation.
Well, it just doesn't make sense. I can't imagine that there's budget issues. You know, they throw money around for so many different things in the hundreds of billions of dollars, and they're short on that. So they've run out of materials in order to finish a surgery. I mean, that just, it just doesn't make sense.
It boggles the mind is what it does. I mean, as you read about it, I think it was in USA Today, I want to say last week, and I could supply you with the article, and you read it and you're just absolutely stunned that any hospital would have the issue, much less to that extent to where they really had to borrow things from another entity to complete a task. It's just kind of like, how did you not know, number one, you didn't have the proper stuff, but number two, why don't you have it? It's a very basic supply and demand situation. And you'd think with the VA being military, they'd understand the supply chain pretty well.
Well, and also because they know that they're going to have these issues. It's not something like you're in an emergency room and you're not sure what's going to come through the door. They know what's going to happen. They know there's a certain amount of people that obviously exited the military that are in transition, the time period. So based on just, statistics for the past couple of years, they have an idea on how many of the certain issues that they're going to have come through their door in a certain period of time. So it's like they're unprepared on purpose.
Or lackadaisical, whatever it might be. There's certainly performance issues and evaluation issues that must be taken into effect or taken into account, I guess. Again, how do you not know your own supply chain and what you have or don't have in the hospital for treatment packages? It just boggles the mind. It really does.
So does the military or the government have any support programs for these military families and children at all? Or if it's not for the nonprofit organizations like you, there'd be nothing.
I guess here's the biggest challenge there is that if they have a program, nobody seems to know about it. Veteran Services here in the state of Arizona, for example, does a great job of assisting veterans to get into the VA programs, but nobody knows that they exist. And why, I don't know. My son didn't know they existed until I told him about it once I took this position. So there's some support in that sense. Now, there aren't, to my knowledge anyway, any dramatic programs via the military or the government that assist the family. They're mostly private groups like ourselves in different states that help. The only real support group I can think of is Survivor Outreach Services, and that's really for the Gold Star families. And they will assist the Gold Star families with helping them get into the system with benefits and whatnot. And they're kind of for support, but they aren't funded to the point where they can actually help economically, for example. They can't write a check for anything. They have to refer people to people like us. So if a family has an issue with their apartment or their rent or their car, utilities, they can't help beyond saying, here, call Helping Hands for Freedom or call so-and-so or call X or call Y. Perhaps they can help you. So it's kind of a limited kind of support, if you will, almost an information system more than anything else. And that's the only thing that I'm aware of that really helps from the government standpoint.
Well, just to me, it just doesn't make any sense why there's just so lack of communication when nowadays with technology, the internet, social media, they have so much easier ways to get the information out to these guys, because like I said, they know who's leaving the military. It's not like a surprise. We have three today who had no idea. They know exactly who's leaving. They know exactly where they're going. And the support is just, it's not there. I just, for the civilian, for the rest of us that aren't in the world of the military, or in the support groups, when you hear these stories, you just, because it's out of sight, out of mind. So unless you're listening to someone talk about it, or you're participating with some sort of volunteer with an organization or actively involved, you don't think that this goes on in the world. You just hear, little snippets on the news maybe about some of the suicide issues or some of the other things, but it's not widely talked about because they probably don't want to talk about it through the media because it makes the military and the government look bad. But it's basically out of sight, out of mind, but it's a huge problem.
Well, it's two things. Number one, even the VA situation, for example, they do offer some psychological help if you can get in. Again, it goes back, can you get in? And the result is they're going to prescribe to you a drug, which isn't necessarily – it's a mask. It doesn't really solve the problem. It just masks the problem. And I think in general, because you're not in the military and it's a smaller part of the population, you do tend to drive by it because you're not involved day to day because you're not a veteran. You're not a soldier. You're not a Marine. You're not a sailor or you're not a flyboy. And that all is their own little cocoon, if you will, of their own life experience that – we probably don't want to know about, number one, or presume because they're veterans, hey, it must be great. We've had people over and over that we go to raise money, for example, They'll say, well, doesn't the VA take care of that? I say, no, the VA doesn't take care of that. The VA's job is strictly medicinal, if you can get into the system. It's not to take care of anything else beyond that. There aren't all these programs for veterans to get any monetary aid. That comes from private groups like ourselves who will assist them with life needs, desperate situations, or life experiences like games and ball games and amusement parks and whatnot for the Gold Star families. But nothing like that comes from the government. It's not part of their experience. Once they're out, they're out. And they're kind of like, see ya, have a nice life. And that's pretty much it.
It's very alarming to find out that when they're doing the transition, there's not continuous support, therapeutic support or emotional support or counseling, because that would seem that it would make more sense to do that than actually hand the guy a bag of pills, knowing that that is going to snowball into just a disaster for the family, for himself or herself. By being in 2018, where we know that there's so many better ways to treat people, so they could not get down the road where they're going to have those financial issues, that now they come to you looking for that. You know, it's just, like I said, it's mind-blowing that all of this is transpiring at this day and age when there really are solutions.
And I think the transition period is something they've not handled well in the past. They're kind of starting to now, by the way. Here in Arizona, I know of two particular situations where out of Luke Air Force Base, they have finally established a group that will help you transition from the military to a civilian life. And it's basic stuff, how to write a resume, how to use LinkedIn, how to interview, because they haven't had to do those kind of things before. And in some sense, they're kind of intimidated by the civilian life because they're used to a certain amount of structure in the military, and civilian life is very, very different. And one of the biggest challenges most veterans have is that lack of structure in the workplace, because to them, you know, you do this, you do that, and that's how it is. Boom, boom, boom. In civilian life, it's much more casual, if you will, and people don't always fulfill what they're supposed to do because it's much more lax in terms of structure, and that's a big challenge. Now, that office was established, I want to say, maybe 6 months ago, so it's pretty new, and there's a second one being done on the east side of Phoenix as well as part of the Rio Salado College group. That's a big step because one of the bigger challenges you have when people exit the military, whether or not they've been in war or not, is just getting that first job out of the military. And obviously, if you can get employed, you have some financial stability. And that's the first big thing that happens to any veteran leaving the service. And once they're on that case, that's when they don't need our help to pay a basic bill. It's when they struggle to find that first job. They're out of the military. They might have some issues with health that they can't resolve easily on their own, and they become a casualty of the unemployment line, and that's where it kind of snowballs down the hill, and it becomes a problem for the veteran and the family.
You know, that's really sad to hear it from that perspective, because if you look at the work habits, the ethics, and like you said, the fact that they are in this structured world, they're probably much more qualified than somebody who went to a four-year college and came out where it was, you know, they partied, they had a great time, they barely made it through with grades, they came and goes, they played. I mean, would you rather hire the guy who has structure, who's disciplined, who has skills, like life skills, or somebody who barely made it through college? You know what I mean? If you compare the two, it's just like, I can't believe that more people aren't hiring somebody from the military.
Well, I can tell you that some companies are making more of an effort. For example, I know ADP locally does a lot with that. A lot of the bigger companies do. It's a function of preparing the person to impress the interviewer that they have the skills to do the job. And that's where a lot of them don't have that. They aren't used to that kind of a thing. And that's being handled by people like Luke Air Force Base and Rio Salado College, which is a great first step. And more we have now Wanda Wright, who's the Director of Veteran Services here in Arizona, is on a committee nationally to help women veterans better prepare for post-service positions. And my own person, Joyce Sprink, is my assistant here. She's on the governor's committee here in Arizona. There's a 10-woman group, and their focus is to help women veterans get into the workplace prepared to do the job. And that's a big step for women in general, because women veterans have typically kind of been ignored, frankly, by the structure of the service and the VA and everything. If you look at situations of homelessness with veterans, women are very poorly served in that realm. The men have probably 95% of the resources, and if you come down to the type of place they're at, you'll typically find the males have a much nicer space than the women have in the past. Joan Sisko is trying to change that here in Arizona. a couple other women are very active in that area. So it's a there's a big thing happening in Arizona, which I'm kind of proud of, that there's women who are taking big steps to help women become employable out of the service and to help homeless women very aggressively get back on their feet and better prepared for the workforce as well. So that's probably the second biggest thing. You come out of a combat situation lacking the ability to get immediate health care, or you're a service member who's just been a service member and you may or may not have been in combat and you're ill-prepared to transition to the civilian workforce. And that's being addressed probably better than the healthcare system is.
Thankfully, there's organizations like yours that can help support these families. Why don't you talk about the specific programs that your organization offers?
Our primary two are life needs and life enrichment. Life needs is serious financial short-term situations. They come to us, we probably get two or three calls a day or emails a day from people needing help, primarily with rent or mortgage. Occasionally it's car, occasionally it's utilities. But it's 75% of them are about rent and mortgage. And they need help paying probably a back bill or two. For various reasons, they're behind on their payments. Could be a job loss, could be one of the spouses lost. Could be some illness situations with bills that have put them behind the eight ball when it comes to that. And we have them fill out an application. We get a copy of their DD-214, which is their service record. And we have them give us copies of whatever expenses they want us to review. We will only pay the debtor, not the person. So if they have an electric bill to pay, we will pay directly to APS or SRP. We'll pay directly to their mortgage lender or their landlord. And we have a retired general who leads a committee who reviews this and makes the final determination. I'm not allowed to make a decision on this kind of thing. It keeps me out of the politics of it, I guess. And nobody knows who the committee members are, so they can't, you know, lobby them for help. The decision is made strictly on need and perceived need based on the documentation we get. And then we write the checks to those people who need the money and keep them in their home. At some point, we also give them some resources for financial counseling if they have that situation. If they're unemployed and struggling to keep a job, we send them again to these groups we know about that help people get prepared for interviews and whatnot so they can maybe take that next step and get a better job. And then life enrichment program is much more fun. That's geared toward Gold Star families primarily, or families of wounded warriors who've come back with some injuries. And, for example, we were at the Wildlife Zoo in the west side of Phoenix last Saturday. We had about 100 family members out there, and we basically fund the day. So they come for free. They get a meal from Dylan's Barbecue. And George Valverde, who owns Dylan's, is a huge supporter of the military and veterans here in Phoenix. Does a lot of things for us at either low cost or no cost. And so they had a great meal. They have a day at the zoo. They wander on their own. They can do their own thing, go as a group, whatever they want to do. Our next one's at Castles and Coasters. We have picnics. We take them to ball games, the Suns, the hockey team, baseball, the whole thing. And it's a big, fun day for them. It gives them a chance to bond as kind of a unique segment of the population where you have young kids who've lost a parent, and now they see other kids who've lost a parent. And they kind of have a – it kind of helps them realize they aren't all by themselves, the only kid or kids who've lost a mother or father. So – it's a really good bonding experience for them. They form their own little friendships and see each other at events. All of a sudden, they have like another buddy, if you will. So that's a fun part of the job. Dream Chaser is something else we do. About once or twice a year, we get a special request. Last year, we got a special request from SOS, who came to us. So we have a family here, and the situation is very tragic. About 5 years ago, the mother returned from Afghanistan, and the husband shot and killed her, and shot and killed himself.
Geez.
The kids were orphans. And they have an aunt and uncle here in Phoenix. This was in Carolina, who took them 4 years to adopt the kids. They get them out here to Phoenix. Now the kids are like 6 and 8. And the kids' dreams go to Legoland. And Joyce Brink, my liaison officer, took it upon herself to make arrangements for Legoland, the hotel, the amusement park, which I didn't realize there's actually three versions of Legoland. It's like three different parts of the same big, huge facility. Hmm. And they donated the tickets, and the hotel gave us two nights free. One night we had to pay for, and we sent the family to Legoland. And that was it was almost like a make-a-wish situation. It makes a dream come true, a really special event like that. We've sent people to Disneyland, those kind of things. So that's another fun part, if you will, of the program. We have occasional sports and education camps. Malik Jackson, the Jacksonville Jaguars, assists us in Florida, and we had, I think, 400 kids at a camp this past spring. Before the football season started, I would guess it was probably last May. It was about this time last year, actually, about March or April. And he has a big camp. He brings in some NFL players, and they let kids play soccer and football. And and talk about life and responsibility and grades and education and whatnot. And he's been a huge help to us there. He also does a thing there for Christmas where he closes down a theater and invites all the kids. They'll get Coke and popcorn, and they watch a kids' movie together. And it's a big, big deal to them as well. So that's kind of the sports and education part. Those are the four pillars, I guess, we stand on. However, the primary one is life needs. That's the one that really drives the bus. And that's what really we're, again, most of our funding goes to, because that's where it needs to go to.
So are you finding those numbers of people calling in for the life needs is increasing, or is it kind of steady?
It has definitely increased, and I think part of this because we've done a better job of outreach, frankly. But yeah, we used to get, you know, 5 or 10 calls a month. Now we're getting 2 or 3 a day. So yeah. It's gotten way different. Much more challenging in terms of funding, obviously. And sometimes we simply can't fund it, but we have a lot of allies that, we've reached out to. Joy's done a great job of basically finding about another 30 or 35 organizations around the state and country who have very specific niches as well. For example, St. Vincent de Paul will pay utilities very quickly. We had an 80-year-old veteran who does not qualify under a program. There's no kids in the house. Lives in a trailer in Glendale with his wife, and he calls, and he's desperate last August for an electric bill. He had to actually prepay. He was always falling behind, so he had one of those little, I guess, machines on the side of his house. He had to plug in a credit card and pay his electric bill ahead of time. Well, he didn't have any money for it, and we can't really support an 80-year-old in terms of our charter, but we found St. Vincent de Paul, and each diocese has a parish or two. We called them, and they went out there, plugged in 2 months of funding for him. Rosie also needed food, and went and grocery shopping with him. So it's a great example of how we weren't the solution in terms of directly the solution, but we were part of the solution. And we find that very frequently now we discovered some partnerships like that, to where if we really can't help, for either we don't have the funding that month or that week, or it's not really in our wheelhouse from our charter standpoint, that we can find partners who oftentimes will take up the ball and run it through and take care of things. We've had people pay bills. We've had people we've partnered with where somebody had a huge mortgage payment. We didn't have enough money to really go to just the one family. So we cobbled together 2 other groups who would pay part of it, and all 3 of us together took care of the bill. That's becoming more and more common as we've seen the increase in need, because frankly, we can't handle 2 or 3 people a day. That's just way out of our realm financially. But with help, we get everybody some sort of help, which is the good part of things. Somehow they get help from somebody we connect them to.
It's great that you're a resource and having contacts with these other organizations, because when they're calling in, they don't know and they don't really have the time, or they're not in the capacity to be creative on where to go. So it's nice to hear that the different organizations are working together as opposed to maybe competing over something, when at the end of the day, the goal is to really help these guys and girls and these families.
And a lot of it isn't, because St. Vincent de Paul is not a military organization. They don't care who you are. They'll help people who aren't military, but they will help veterans as well. And there's a lot of our partnerships with people who aren't strictly geared toward a veteran family, but they're geared toward a certain type of assistance. And that's how we found some great partnerships that way, that if we can't do A, they can do A, or they'll help us do A. And that seems to be probably in the last few months. That's what I've noticed more than anything. When our demand went up, our dependence on partnerships also went up, but it's worked out pretty well, knock on wood.
As far as 2017, was there one event or one family member or one kid that really stood out that you went, wow, that one got me?
That was the Dream Chaser. Okay. When you met those 2 little kids, boy and a girl, 8 and 6, whose parents had been killed at their own hand, essentially. The little boy was a bundle of energy, a very positive kid, really happy. I was kind of surprised that the aunt and uncle had done a great job, obviously, of raising these 2 kids. It's the fact they brought him into their home. I was impressed that they brought him across the country, didn't let him stay in an orphanage in Carolina. And to meet the family, this new family, if you will, they were great people. And that's when you kind of realize, wow, we really made a difference in that family today. We also see an occasional situation where people are, I'll tell you one other one where we helped a family with a number of bills out in Litchfield Park, and they were struggling. He had been hurt on the job, and she had just lost her job due to a layoff. We paid, rent, water bill, electricity, the whole thing. She came to me, and one of their kids was a Make-A-Wish child. He has cancer, and he's since recovered, thank God. But his Make-A-Wish was to meet the Pope, and they showed a picture of him meeting the Pope. And they actually gave me a religious medal blessed by the Pope in appreciation of what we had done for them. And that's wow. pretty powerful stuff. You know, it's like, wow. I mean, so I do have around my neck my son's dog tags and this medallion that a Pope the Pope blessed about 2 years ago. So that's pretty cool.
It makes you realize what amazing work that you're doing. It's nice to have that that feeling of not necessarily being rewarded, but it just makes you, it puts you right there to say, you know what, I know what I'm doing is the right thing, you know?
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So what about 2018? You've got some fundraising events. I know there's a really fun golf tournament that's coming up.
Yeah, we do. We have a golf event at Moon Valley Country Club on April 23rd. It's a shotgun kind of a situation where the scramble event, you don't have to be a good golfer to play in it. You just have to be a golfer. And it's $250 per person. We have various sponsorships on our website. You can find the whole list of those things. But that's a 12:30 shotgun. You get lunch, you get dinner. And a comedian named Mark Cordes, who's pretty well known here and pretty well known nationally, actually, entertains. And he gave us basically, he's doing it for free for all intents and purposes. He's going to ride around the golf course, meet some people so he can make fun of them later on that night and know their names. And he's a very clever guy. So it'll be fun that way. And it's one of our major fundraisers. We'll have about 140 golfers if it fills up. And usually we donate or we provide three or four foursomes to either Wounded Warriors or Gold Star members for free, so they get to come. We have an Iwo Jima veteran showing up that night who is a Moon Valley resident just to recognize the fact that he was in Iwo Jima, which is pretty impressive. And he's still pretty vibrant, knock on wood. So it's a great event. That's one fun thing we have going. We just had a gala in Indianapolis, Indiana, which is our other primary city. That went fantastic. We have a golf event there as well in July in Indianapolis. Those are our next big bangs, if you will, for that. Otherwise, we have a lot of support from some certain companies and certain individuals. Walmart's been great to us. ADP has been great to us. Dispensaries in general have been good to us because a lot of their patients are veterans suffering from PTSD. Mm-hmm. So we have some good support that way. And 2018 is off to a really good start that way. We've had a lot again. We have more money coming in. We have a lot more people who need it. So it kind of comes in and goes out about as fast as we can make it come and go. So it's been a real active. It's already the middle of March. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And we're just running and gunning. But the golf events are our next big deal. It's a blast. It's a beautiful golf course. It's where Annika Sorensen set the women's record for golf shooting at 59. It's in great shape. They put on a great event, and everybody enjoys coming to it every year. So if anybody wants to play in it, they can certainly go to the website and sign up, helpinghandsforfreedom.org. And just click on the banner, and it takes you right to the sign-up sheet.
And they don't need to have a foursome. They could go solo or bring two people, and you match everybody up, so they don't have to worry about recruiting other bodies. They could just go because they want to go.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. We'll find a place. There's always singles and doubles that need to be put into a foursome. That's just part of it. Not a big deal. We're used to it.
So what's the date again?
Monday, April 23rd, 12:30 shotgun. We do it pretty quickly where you play in about 4.5 hours. It's very straightforward. There's not a lot of things on the golf course to hold things up or make it a 6-hour day. You come into a buffet dinner. Actually, you start on the patio with a brat and chips and whatever you want to drink. Go play golf. By the way, the Anheuser-Busch, the Hensley people provide free alcoholic beverages for those who choose to. Coke donates the Coke, so it all helps the bottom line of the event. And after golf, there's a quick live auction, and you have a buffet dinner, and we have the comedian, and you're out of there probably, I guess, by 6:30, 6:45 to 7. So it's a pretty quick day in terms of how some of these events go. We try to keep it so you aren't like leaving there at 8:00 at night, just tired after a day in the sunshine. So
it's a fun event. It's a great way to get exposed to the organization. Plus you're financially supporting it. You're enjoying yourself. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of fun. Golf tournaments are always a great time. So if you want to give the website again, that would be great. So I want to make sure people have access to the information.
It is www.helpinghandsforfreedom.org. And there's a big banner at the top about the golf event, which you'll see almost right away. There's only two banners flipping right now. And pressing the banner takes you right to the sign-up sheet.
So just to put things in perspective while people are digesting all this information, how many Gold Star families are in Arizona?
Roughly 500.
Wow.
Approximately.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty high number. For the size of our state, you know, there's 6 million people in Arizona. We have over, I'm trying to think of the math, You know, we have over 500 Gold Star families in the state.
And a majority of those you're saying are from post 9/11.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are young kids. So whether, depending on when the event happened, whether it was during their time over there serving or afterwards, now with all these other issues, it's all, sometimes it's all they've known. So that's gotta be tough on it. It's tough being a kid anyway, no less adding on a severe loss like that, especially like you said, the two kids that you took care of on that Dream Chaser Lego event.
Well, plus, I mean, the situation, there's one, I'm thinking of one Gold Star family in particular. They were married for about a year and a half. She's only 22 now, and her husband didn't make it back about a year ago. So some of these people are very young, primarily probably under 35 for the most of them, because most of our younger recruits have gone on. They're brand new to the service, and that's one of the first things. You know, my son was 21 years old when he went over to Afghanistan for the first time, and he was there twice. So that's a pretty typical age, unless you're an officer, perhaps. But even then, you don't find a lot of people in the 45, 55-year-old category there, unless they're senior officers, career people. And they aren't as exposed to direct combat as a lot of the younger people out there, who are younger career guys who want to make it happen, and they want to lead, and they want to, you know, move up the ranks. Or there are people like my son who went in for 4 years and spent about a year of it over in Afghanistan.
And you said he's doing much better now than when he first got out, right?
Much better. It's been 6 years, but he went through the typical divorce situation where he came back and he was not mentally healthy. And it showed. He had a brand new daughter who was only a few months old. And the wife was pretty afraid of him because he had a lot of temper issues. And he moved in with me for 3 years. So I experienced that myself. And at first I thought she was, you know, pretty nasty for divorcing him after service and combat. But I found out when he moved in with me that, you know, she had reason to be a little concerned because he just had a lot of temper control issues. So he got the divorce, which was another bad spiral. Had a hard time holding a job because of PTSD, another bad spiral. And he's the kind of person who, if he didn't have a support group with his parents, maybe he would have been another casualty. And he's mentioned to me before that he thought more than once about taking his own life. So I know that he was on the edge, and that he finally, seriously, I remember when he first began using medicinal marijuana, it definitely, I saw a change where he wasn't as aggravated. He had a calming agent he could use that didn't have side effects. And I thought it made a huge difference in him, and it helped him kind of transition into a different life. And he met a woman he eventually married recently. His daughter is now 7 years old. He now has half custody of her, and before he could not have that because the judge was concerned about his PTSD. So he's made a lot of changes. He has a great job now, making those great, huge, big heads you see at sporting events. People wave around of athletes and celebrities and whatnot, based right here in North Phoenix, and he's the production manager there and doing very well. He's going to buy a home, so he's really going to he's made that turn. But we're finding that it takes about 4 to 5 years, assuming they make it through, before they really kind of settle down. And that's, I've heard that from so many people that I think they've now tracked it seriously enough. The Vietnam era guys never had a chance. Nobody realized what it was and nobody really cared. It's now prevalent. People understand what it is, often caused by a traumatic brain injury, which my son has, basically too many concussions from explosions, so that your brain just is damaged, essentially, which can damage, obviously, your reaction, your personality, all those kind of things. And that's actually more prevalent than PTSD, but it kind of causes PTSD. And they're kind of discovering that, too, as part of the problem. So all that being said, he's doing well. I think in the back of his mind, it's always there. Most guys I've talked to that have experienced, it's always there. But now it's controllable at a certain part, like anything else. I mean, you kind of get over certain things, and you can handle it, I guess, or manage it, I guess is the best way to say it, and understand how to manage it. And that's probably the biggest key for him.
Well, glad to hear that he's doing much better. And thankfully, he had a support system like you in order to get him to the point of where he is today.
That's probably the biggest thing, that they don't do a great job of educating the family about the fact that this person who comes back is going to be different if they've been in the combat zone, and that nobody's prepared for it. The veteran is not prepared for it. The family's not prepared for it. And if they could address that step more effectively, I think they have a lot better success rate in terms of the marriages staying together, which means, of course, stable family, stable home, stable environment. And there's that period of time where everybody's going to have to understand they have to kind of work through it. And if they work through it, it'll be okay. But a lot of times they aren't prepared to handle it, and their reaction is to flee from it. In both cases, they'll flee the marriage, flee the relationships, flee the jobs, whatever it is. And that's the wrong step, but there's nothing there to reinforce the right step. And that's part of the tragedy of it all.
Well, yeah, it's a lot easier to throw your hands up in the air and walk away from it than it is to dig in deep and figure out what the problem is and then work on it. That's the hard part.
That is the hard part, and it's the part that they don't have any help with. And that's probably that gap. If they could address that gap, kind of goes back. You can't get into the VA for a long time. Well, that's one thing, but you also don't have any family counseling available necessarily to help you kind of realize this person's different. How are they going to be different? Well, you're going to see these behavior changes. And this, both of you recognize what's going on so you can manage it versus not understanding what's going on and reacting negatively to it.
The family members need to have that awareness that there's going to be a change, give them the tools and let them be prepared. You know, it's almost like the whole group needs therapy, and it needs to be continual. It's not just at one time, here's your pamphlet, and by the way, here's it's going to go on, because especially, like you said, these are young men and women, so they don't have 20 or 30 years of life experience of just dealing with just chaos in general. So then when they get something thrown at them, plus if you've got young kids at home, I mean, just add on all those layers, and then, you know, like you said, it's just easier to walk away or not deal with it.
If you're a young family, life's tough enough. You know, you probably have a couple working parents, and you got a couple young kids, and there's all things that go on with that. And I introduced this whole thing about one of the people being less than stable based on some life experiences, and that makes it that much more difficult to manage the relationship between the two adults. And of course, kids see the fallout from that as well. And if the parent is acting visibly different to a young kid, 3, 4, 5 years old, well, that could be, oh my God, you know, dad or mom is going to jump on me or be angry. And so they start changing how they react to their own parent.
Well, yeah, because the person's different. It's like, this is not the same person that I knew. So that makes it even worse. I mean, if the person, you know, not in this scenario, but in general, if the person was not nice, and they've always not been nice, that's one thing. But if everything was great, and then all of a sudden one day they show up, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. It's a totally different person. It's basically, like you said, out of their control. But the interaction of the family members and the people around them, a lot of people just can't deal with that. And then that, like you said, that service member, the guy or girl, gets left behind. And then it's, like you said, downward spiral from there. So it's just sad.
Yep.
And I'm thankful for organizations like yours that can give the support, that financial support, and even give those kids opportunities to go to these events, the ball games, the castles and coasters, the wildlife zoo, the Phoenix Zoo Lights. I mean, that's really important that these kids get to experience that, because, you know, the poor things have to go through having to deal with the loss of a parent at any age. It's tough. I give you credit too, because you have to deal with these stories every day. So it's got to be emotional on you just listening to just stories and the people, and you want to help everybody. You just can't.
And I give kudos to my liaison officer, Joyce Brink, because she deals more than I do directly with a lot of this. I get 20%. She gets 80% of it. And it is true. Every day she has a couple of traumatic phone calls, and we talk about it and react appropriately and do what we have to do. But you don't get a lot of good phone calls. We get occasional thank you, which is always nice, but primarily they're looking for help. They need help, and they need it quickly. And in many cases, circumstances are pretty dire. We had one recent one where a Marine had been deployed like 9 times and 100% disabled at this point in time. It can't really hold a job, and the family needs help with the home and transitions and different things. And you got to hear some of the stories, and you're like, whew, man, you can't even imagine what it'd be like to be in that household and how they were struggling just to maintain a reasonable standard of living.
I give you guys credit, especially Joyce. If she's listening to 80% of these stories, the poor thing, she ends up being like a counselor almost. She's there as a resource. And she's moving quickly, but she's also, I mean, she's got to take those stories home. So hopefully she gets a little time out on her own and she gets a break from that, because that just wears on you, I'm sure.
Well, I also will tell you that we put her through some classes, so she actually is trained to some level, not like a psychologist, obviously, but she's been through training to handle those kind of calls better than your average person. So it is a grind, believe me. I see her go through it some days where she really has reactions to it, but she's been trained to handle it better than most, and she does handle it better than most. She's more than a right hand here. She's like a critical part of it. We're the only two people who work here. I'm the only full-time employee. She's a 32-hour-a-week person, so we don't have a lot of resources or overhead in terms of that. We have a small office, the two of us, and that's pretty much it.
It's the beauty of the nonprofit. We run it like a business. You expect to be able to produce like a business and help like a business, and you have two people working there, except the business has 15. So you got to be creative. And you better roll up your sleeves because you're doing everything. You got 25 job titles because nobody cares and it needs to get done. Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly what it's like.
I don't know how that ended up being backwards, but just think if it was in the business world, you'd be making 10 times as much money and doing half as much work. But the reasons why you do what you do is because you believe in it and someone needs to step in there and make it happen. So.
Yep. When my son came back from the war, I realized that I was part owner of a small agency at the time, and I joined the board of directors and became more involved. And I saw how it affected him, I had an opportunity to take over as the CEO and sold my shares in my previous company, small company. And so it's a labor of love. It certainly has changed how I view a lot of the things with respect to the veteran community, a lot more appreciation. I've met a lot of really great veterans and Gold Star families who deal with these kind of traumas probably a lot better than I would have. I just have a lot of respect for them and how they've move forward in their lives, but understand they played a pivotal role. Somebody in their family played a pivotal role, or maybe still is playing a pivotal role in things on a world scale. And they deserve the respect and consideration and help that we give them.
I agree completely. And they need to be more recognized. There needs to be more help. There needs to be some more support. And there needs to be more outreach so that the rest of us who are here enjoying wonderful sunny Arizona and going to one spring training games and Phoenix Open and all that fun stuff. The only reason we can do that is because there are people that have served and people that are still over there doing what they got to do. So we can enjoy those wonderful things that are in our country, and more people need to be aware of that and give back in some sort of capacity. So Eric, can you give your website one more time and then we'll wrap up the show.
It is www.helpinghandsforfreedom.org. And you can learn all about us through the various tabs. If you want to join the golf event, there's a banner you can click on. If you want to donate, there's a big donate button in the upper right-hand corner. You can click on that, too, and give whatever amount you would like to one time or monthly. And we'll appreciate any kind of support you can give us.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you for what you do. Tell your son that I said thank you very much for his service, and I'm glad to hear that he is in a much better place, and that was and because of you, too. So thank you for doing everything that you do every day, and tell Joyce we appreciate her efforts tremendously.
I'll do it. Thanks for the podcast. I appreciate it.
Oh, we'll definitely have you back on because we want to hear updates on all these events, and we'll do another episode just before the golf tournament and then one after so we can let everybody know how successful it was. So I appreciate it. And you have a great day, Eric. Appreciate it very much.
All right, thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Everything Home, where we talk about life, stuff, and balance. We had the privilege today of talking to Eric Snells, who's the CEO and executive director of Helping Hands for Freedom. You know, the work that these guys do is amazing. And like I said, they're one of our preferred partners. And our goal is to get some exposure, let everybody know what kind of support they're giving to our veterans, to the Gold Star families. I appreciate everybody listening to the show again. So have a wonderful day, everybody.
You've been listening to Everything Home with Michelle Swinnett.